Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey, now everybody, welcome to episode 328 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson, send you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
All right, on tonight's episode, we'll be doing our trivia as per usual, also talking about Blade Runner and four other new releases, as well as five upcoming trailers for movies this holiday season and early spring of next year. So stay with us while we dissect all of this. But first, let's do the trivia here. Did you see this whole Variety poll on the most profitable movie stars?
I saw... I think I know what this is, because I saw a thing... I don't know if it was a Variety one. Yeah. Well, I saw something passing in the news. I read the title, so.
All right. Well, so then who, according to Variety, who conducted this poll, was the most profitable star from 1980 to 2017 for dollars to return investment on this? Yeah. Who is it?
What I read was Emilio Estevez.
Doesn't that put a smile on your face?
I don't know. Is there a reason for it, too?
I just like that Free Jack. May have made him.
How is that possible? List. Yeah, I mean, what world? That just means he's been in a lot of really low budget movies.
Yeah, I mean, Young Guns couldn't have been made for much, and those did well. But outside of The Toast 2, what did he really star in that?
I know, I'm trying to think of too.
Yeah, it's hard to think of his filmography and think of anything that
they must have been made for just nothing.
Well, here's the second part of the trivia question. Do you see who number two was on the list?
No,
Jean-Claude Van Damme. No shit.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know. It's interesting that it's people, what are we comparing? We're obviously comparing like percentages here or something, right?
Return on investment.
Yeah, but it's a percentage based thing, right? It's not going to be dollars, obviously, because that wouldn't track. So it's not really fair, right?
Well, they were smaller
movies. They were smaller budget. They're older movies, so they're gonna. They tend to make more, percentage wise.
Early Van Damme stuff, which was like $200,000, it was making $10 million. Over indexed then.
Yeah, and if you're gonna do on a return on your investment, then yeah, sure. Because you could a lot of these movies could easily do 200%. Their production budget, right? Come back on earnings, I imagine. We spend hardly anything, and. To be fair, unfortunately, those movies would just not make their money back nowadays, at least theatrically.
Yeah, and the big names always come last in these because they get paid $20 million or so, and their movies only gross $100 million, which is not much compared to them.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking to double your money, but you spend $200 million and you're going to get $400 million back, then... Yeah, big difference. But percentage-wise, if I spend $2 million and I make $20 million... Well, return on investment was, but it's not really fair, is it? It's not really a fair game.
It's not. But I thought this was an interesting little tidbit, and I wanted to bring up Emilio Estevez in today's show.
Now, where is he?
I'd like to see him back.
Yeah. Bring him back. Yeah, I like to get old Emilio.
All right, our first review tonight is going to be for Blade Runner 2049. It's my response to Trevor's review last time out, and you said this was a contender for best of the year for you.
For me, yeah. I'm a big fan of the original, and I thought this was a perfect follow-up to that.
Yeah, I found it to be a real disappointment. I did. I thought it was long, it was slow, I thought it was unorganized, and honestly, I was a little taken aback because Harrison Ford, who you think, you complain about him in Star Wars and The Last Indiana Jones and really everything he's been in since maybe Firewall, you haven't liked him in, but yet you liked him in this. And I thought he was weak in this. I really thought he was showing talk about not invested. I thought he phoned this one in and no sort of chemistry between Gosling and Ford. I mean, their matchup was about as impactful as Josh Hartnett and Ford in Hollywood Homicide. And the stone-faced performance from Gosling, I thought negated his whole charisma. I really did not like it.
It's the whole point of it, right? I mean, he's an android. He's supposed to be steely.
I get it.
And as far as him and Harrison Ford go, they weren't really buddy-buddy cops in this or anything. There wasn't a point for them to become, they didn't fall in love. I mean, I think that's wanting a little bit more than what the movie was even attempting.
I just think it's a great looking movie, but I felt like it left me over-informed.
Well, did you like the original? I mean, how much do you like the original?
About as much, more than I like this in terms of storytelling. But I mean, I'm not.
Please, this has way more of a story. This does, I think, a much better of a job than the other one.
Nah. And tell me that overbearing score. What in the fuck?
I like the score. I really thought that it fit perfectly with the imagery.
I thought it was overbearing, and I don't know. Maybe Fanatics will go over this and will just totally have some sort of relevance for him. But honestly, I'm not even joking. Four people around me were snoring. It put them out, and I don't know. I just started losing. It's a beautifully photographed and brilliantly realized from a production design standpoint. And it has some fine moments in it, but it's at nearly 3 hours. It told me both more and less than I really wanted to know about this world. Do you know what I mean by that? I enjoyed it.
I wanted to live in the world. Yeah, I know, but that was the aesthetic, right? I mean, if you don't like the world, then you're not going to like this movie. But I think they did a fantastic job of portraying exactly what they wanted to do. And if you compare this to the original, it's hands down a great movie. It's a great, just an extension of that original world and storytelling and all that. And if you don't like the original, then you're probably not going to like this, you know? And I get the feeling that you're saying you like the original, but you really kind of don't.
I can't believe you thought this was only a few minutes over 2 hours. This was so...
Yeah, this flew by for me, but I was heavily invested. And I really, I loved the world, and I liked what they were doing with it and doing with the android and you know, I like the wooden horse thing, and I like the idea of, could he be real? Is he, you know, is he not real? Like, where does his memories come from? I thought they did a good job of creating something for him to investigate.
I really thought outside of Ana de Armas, who plays Joy, I thought really no one else was memorable in this movie. I thought she was the most compelling character in the entire thing. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about The Bad Batch here. Another...
So you're not going to like this one either?
Much, much different science fiction, right? And what did you say about this one?
I don't know. I like this one a lot as well. I just said I love the story. It's weird. It feels a very 90s indie feel and vibe to it. And I don't know. It worked for me. We lost you.
Yeah, I really like this one too, to be honest with you. And this for all the reasons... It's strangely that I didn't like Blade Runner. I mean, this movie is Grindhouse to the T in a lot of scenes. Mm-hmm. And I think the first 10 minutes of it are really
captivating.
But did
really you like the story? Or I shouldn't say story, but the plot, the meandering plot that to me worked beautifully. But what'd you feel about that? Was it too?
It's weird because it's a love story about a girl who ends up with this cannibal who actually ate her. It's fucking bizarre and doesn't really go anywhere or really do anything, but it's not about that. And like I said, it's all the reasons I'm dissing Blade Runner. I'm giving credit to The Bad Batch, and The Bad Batch is completely flawed. That sequence with the tripping on whatever drug she's on goes on for way too long, and she leaves Comfort a few times for no reason and comes back. But I do like that she is an outsider even in this outcast society. You know, I thought MoMA has great charisma in this movie. I thought there was some really interesting, it's beautiful to look at, once again visually beautiful in a different, totally different way than Blade Runner, which is stuffed to the gills with fantastic imagery, where this is very stark but still has beautiful images. And I loved this movie for a lot of reasons. Can't really recommend it to anybody because it is a brutal experience. It's really nihilistic and there's no one to get behind or root for, but Carrie's interesting in it.
There's Keanu lots of people to root for. I disagree. Yeah, I definitely rooted for the protagonist here. And I really like Jim Carrey's hermit character a lot as well.
Yeah, I thought that she was an Amber Heard lookalike in this.
Yeah, Suki Waterhouse.
Yeah, the main girl there. And I really didn't need to lose the limbs.
Yeah, of course she did. What are you, crazy?
Ah.
Oh, come on.
Maybe not the leg.
Lose them both. It was fantastic. This is just one of those weird stories. It's not really all that weird, and if you really look at it, but it does present itself in that weird way. And I liked it right from the beginning. They took away her arm and leg, and that became like a big part of her journey.
interesting to look at as well as experience. But this is one of those ones you'll find like the dark hallways on Netflix. You know, this isn't your run of the mill Netflix type experience. So this is on Netflix right now. Short. This is directed beautifully, by the way. I can't say this this lady's name, but she talked. You know, we talked about female directors getting a lot of credit this year, particularly Patty Jenkins with Wonder Woman. And there's no sort of love for this gal who did this, and She Walks Home Alone at Night, which also had that same. This is, I mean, it's almost like a horror film in a lot of ways here. But at the same time, it's
It's like exactly like an action movie used to be. It's just a hard R movie, right?
Yeah, and it's something Tarantino would have loved.
Yeah, that's why, because it has like that '90s indie vibe to it, doesn't it? Where it's kind of just weird and it's meandering, and weird things are happening. And but there's themes, right? It's very thematic as well.
Yeah, and symbolic and a lot of imagery. I highly recommend it to those that are willing to stomach some intense early sequences to get on with a story that isn't really innovative, but innovatively told.
I didn't think it. Well, I don't know. It's the choices that they make in the story are kind of innovative nowadays. I wouldn't say 20 years ago, no. But today, yeah, we don't see a lot of movies like this.
No, and it's really only meant for a certain audience type.
Right, yeah.
All right, let's move on and talk about Free Fire. This is another A24 release. What's going on with this one? Crashed and burned in theaters. Is it really as bad as they say,
yeah,
or is it
you
decent?
Know, it's all right to watch at home. If I had seen this in theaters, probably would have been pretty upset. It is, it's only an hour and a half. Feels like Blade Runner. it's slow, and there's really just not much going on. You know, it's people shooting at each other, and it gets old after a while. They're really just in the one, and they're in the one building. You know, everyone shoots to their legs, so all the action happens a foot off the ground. So people have to crawl around. So there's not even a lot of like action, like real like fun action or anything like that. It's just shooting.
That's unfortunate. They sold this. This was supposed to be like a Guy Ritchie, Tarantino, Reservoir Dogs mashup.
Yeah, it's not enough like direction wise to meet any of that, nor action wise. The acting I thought was great, and I did like some of the things. I liked the way that the firefight started. I thought that was a cool thing. It's not just some simple like, you know, deal gone bad. There's like actually some other unexpected type happenings. I guess I'll say I don't want to ruin it if someone's going to watch this. There is other shit going on with some of the other characters. Again, I won't say. Yeah, you know, it's okay. Watch it. It's on Amazon right now, I believe. So if you have that, give it a try. You know, it's about the only good new thing on right now.
I do want to see this, but your recommendation, it kind of reminded me of the movie Seven Psychopaths and things like that, these off-kilter ones.
Yeah, it's really, and you feel like the low budget of it as well a little bit. You feel like, oh, this is a neat idea, but didn't really get fleshed out all the way. And, you know, man, there's just not much to ideas like this, you know? It's kind of hard to make them into.
Well, it's like Shoot 'Em Up and things like that, these kind of gimmicky
It's worse
ideas.
Than that, I guess, because Shoot 'Em Up at least is you can go around, you can do stuff, you know, you can keep moving and have wacky, ridiculous things happen. And this movie is so, there's a reason it's only an hour and a half, you know, it's so contained that there's just nothing going on, and you can't kill everyone right away. So everyone dies real slowly, you know, and everyone gets shot a couple times, and then they kind of bring in some other characters. They can kill them first real quick, you know, because they're not really main characters. And they do stuff like that. And it's just like, all right.
I still want to see this, but it's now
nah,
lower
give it a shot.
On my Netflix queue. I'll tell you that.
Nah, what else are you going to watch? Give it a shot.
Well, I saw Girls Trip. I finally caught up with the highest grossing comedy of the year last night. And, you know, this is done by Malcolm D. Lee, who did the Best Man series, which I'm a big fan of. And this guy just has an easygoing way of doing these commercial movies that still have a quote-unquote message and things like that. This is obviously inspired by the massive success of things like The Hangover and Bridesmaids. And, you know, even just it's a whole genre now that is basically a colorblind thing. And it's just boys and girls acting raunchy. You know, and this is just another girls acting like guys movie. And that it's set in New Orleans and features four African-American females and is written by an African-American female and directed by an African-American director. It's just supposed to be like the highest grossing film ever done by all African-Americans. But regardless, is it good? Well, kind of. The first 25 minutes is really awkward and setting everything up, but then it finally hits its stride, and Tiffany Hadid, Queen Latifah, Regina Hall, and Jada Pinkett Smith all have great chemistry. There are a couple big laughs here. I especially liked the press agent of Regina King's character making an ass out of herself. There's a sequence when they're all in absinthe, which is great, although Mike Epps plays the guy who sells in the absinthe, almost in an identical role from The Hangover, which is a little obnoxious, but it's funny enough to recommend, and it finally won me over, although it's pretty heavy-handed, and you can see where everything's going, even some of the gags. You know, there's a big gag above the swing set above bars in New Orleans on Bourbon Street, and you know where that's going even before it happens, but it still pays off in the end. Tiffany Hadid is hilarious. I liked her in Keanu. I really liked her in this. I recommend the movie, but it's not gonna, I don't see where they would ever go with a sequel to this. This is gonna get old real quick. But for what it is, it's well made and it's entertaining, and it is probably the best comedy I've seen this year. All right, let's move on.
That's not a good thing.
That's not a ringing endorsement, is it? I guess that would never be an
Well, the best comedy of this year, yeah.
The best comedy I've seen this year.
Pretty rough. This year's not been kind to comedies.
It really hasn't. This year also has not been kind to Tom Cruise, who had a major misstep with The Mummy earlier this year. It was his second, really, not only box office failure after Jack Reacher 2, but subpar film, I thought. Both just really not on his level and his stamp of quality I always felt his movies had, kind of like Denzel Washington. But American Made is a step back on the right track. This is his reteaming with Doug Liman, who did Edge of Tomorrow. I really like this movie, although it never fully takes off. This is one of those movies that is always teetering on the brink of bursting into greatness or having just – or are you just being really memorable, but it never – it just always is solid. It's a solid, good movie. Cruise is in absolutely every scene, and he dominates the movie. He's great in this movie. It's a lot of Cruise. I'm a Cruise fan, so I didn't mind it, but he is in it a lot. And this is a movie, ironically, he could have made at any point in his career, and it would have been the exact same movie and just as good, I feel like. Honestly, he could have starred in this in 1996, and it would have been fine. But this character is interesting enough. He's kind of a fuck-up. He's a bit of an oddball, and the movie itself is a bit odd, but I liked it. It's a little bit below that, but as far as these drug runner movies go, it's better than something like Contraband, so I recommend it, but it's not the greatest movie he's ever been in, but it's for sure a step back in the right direction. Let's get the trailer attic, buddy. Let's do this.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay.
All right, which one do you want to talk about first?
Let's just do Jungle first. Let's do this here Harry Potter movie.
Harry Potter goes to the jungle? Grows couple balls?
Yeah, goes to the jungle. It's kind of getting away from the city life, you know, wants to rough it in the jungle a little bit, and gets left out there. I guess the guide that took him out there is apparently crazy, and I guess wants to teach him a lesson. Why did he leave him out there? Is that what you got out of it? Like he kind of feels like he's too soft.
What I got out of this was a mix between The Beach and Deliverance here. And I'm usually a sucker for these kind of movies like The Damned River, which we always say is a great little gem that no one's seen.
Well, it's not really those, though. The guide leaves, right?
Is that what, or is he hunting him? Is it?
There's no way he's hunting him. Because it didn't show any of that. The guide was just gone. And then his friend got killed, apparently, or
I don't trust that. This has been directed by Greg McLean, who did Wolf Creek, one of the most intense horror films I've ever seen in a theater, honestly. And
yeah, but
that.
Why is that not in the trailer then?
I think this is a soft trailer.
This feels
for that.
Like, yeah, well, it's just a limp dick trailer. That's what it feels like a little bit.
Basically, I mean, look at the trailers for Turistas. I mean, that movie's a lot more hardcore than those trailers gave it off to be. That's why I was so surprised when I saw it.
Yeah, but this doesn't give any of that. It doesn't say. It just shows. Really, this trailer shows a movie about Danny Radcliffe getting left in the woods and having to, or the jungle. And having to fend for himself, right? And that's it. That's the whole
trailer.
I think
trailer. In my mind, I'm making up a better movie than the actual trailer.
That's what I'm saying. I really want to see the movie you just said, but...
it's not what you saw.
That's not what the trailer is, but that would be interesting. But I don't... Wouldn't you be asking for the wrong crowd if the movie turned out to be like Wolf Creek?
Well, I mean, Radcliffe is now doing really interesting work. I mean, Swiss Army Man's a failure, but sure. It's interesting at least. And Imperium he did, which was the Ku Klux Klan movie where he's right. The undercover cop. And this goes along with a lot of stuff. So got to give him credit for doing that. I think he's actually trying this is different genres.
Too mundane of a trailer. Maybe there is more.
I do. I think this is cut for mass audiences and not for its core audience.
That'll be a big mistake, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I would agree.
That'll destroy expectations on this movie. All
this
right.
is available on video on demand already. It came out October 20th, so you can catch it on your local cable. Okay, let's talk about Phantom Thread, Paul Thomas Anderson's latest trailer featuring purportedly the last performance ever by Daniel Day-Lewis. They teamed together for There Will Be Blood. He is some sort of tailor in this who is very eccentric and obsessive. He gets some sort of muse. Mm-hmm. We don't know if she's using him over the years or if it's true love. I'm really not looking forward to this movie. This looks, I mean, Paul Thomas Anderson's movies are so stilted lately. His movie, they're damn near unwatchable. They've gotten to be for me. After The Master, it was like, to me, it's all style over any sort of
The Master.
Emotion. What did you think of this?
I thought this looked interesting. I would watch this. Hmm. But my worry is that, as you say, it's going to be too slow in parts and it will ruin the entire movie. And well, it appears possibly as well can meander.
You think? They got me in the beginning yeah. there when she asks him the question and it takes about a 30-second actorly pause to start
I'm okay
the trailer
with that, but I worry that there's more of that isn't in this trailer. You want to set a scene, you want to make a scene, you want to do this and that. I'm okay with that, but as long as we were on track for something, you know? Well, once we start just... putting in extra scenes that are just slow, that don't do anything, don't move the story or anything, then I don't know. And I feel like this may be one of those. This kind of feels like, I don't know.
Self-indulgent?
Yes. Yes. It feels like an artiste, you know what I mean? So it's someone that will possibly get carried away and I don't know. It looks fantastic and the acting was great and I think the story is interesting, but...
Yeah, I didn't take to it.
I don't know. He is playing Mr. Woodcock, so I do think that that's interesting. Because Mr. Woodcock's awesome.
Well, that's what she said. All right, let's talk about her. Let's talk about I, Tonya, the Margaret Robbie headlined film about Tonya Harding, which is coming up on its 25th anniversary of when the actual incident took place.
I love that there's an anniversary for it.
Well, yeah, right.
What are you doing on the Tonya anniversary?
You see the meme, you know, after all these NFL football players refused to stand, they were all taking a knee, and it said when taking a knee meant something, and it was a picture of Nancy Kerrigan.
Yeah.
It's good. But this trailer is very brief. It's kind of a teaser trailer with some raves from the Boston Globe, from the early film festivals.
What did you think of it? I think it's a shitty teaser.
I thought it looked great for a teaser.
I think this
looks
terrible.
That Margaret Robbie can easily, that she really isn't just a flash in the pan, that she's slipping into doing these, you know, maybe
the voiceover was horrendous.
I thought it was hit a great tone, like a mocking kind of fun
shit tone. It didn't, the words didn't even make a lot of sense. I don't know. This movie feels like a reach to me. I don't think Tonya Harding deserves a fucking movie.
I hope it's as entertaining as the 30 for 30 episode they did on ESPN about this incident maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, mm-hmm. because that was flat out entertaining. If they can't make a movie as entertaining as that real life documentary, which they seldom do on a subject like this, then mm-hmm. really it shouldn't be made. But this looked like it hit an interesting sort of
we'll
tone.
See. I'll need an actual trailer. This is really just nothing. And, I don't know. I didn't like the fucking voiceover. I was like, no.
All right, let's move on and talk about The New Mutants. Josh Boone, director of The Fault in Their Stars and kind of a hot filmmaker at the moment.
Oh, he's hot.
Well, I mean, with teen love stories.
With a name like Boone, how can you not
be? Boone. And so Boone over there gets behind the X-Men Marvel franchise, but you wouldn't know it's an X-Men movie or Marvel because this is the first
Well, it says Marvel at the beginning.
Well, if they didn't tell you that, would you have any idea this was an X-Men movie?
Well, it's not really necessarily the first, right? They did have the Professor X. God, what's that? The TV show?
This looks just like Gifted and Inhumans and all this shit.
No, looks way different than both those. God, what the hell was that TV show? I can't remember. A fantastic TV show, though. And so this could be, you know, a little bit creepy, a little bit of that. I don't know. I'm kind of over the mutant thing. Am I wrong?
It's just a cure for wellness in the X-Men world. I mean, this is not interesting.
That'll be way more interesting than a cure for wellness, tell you that much. It'll be more interesting than probably most anything like this, but it doesn't mean that it's good. Although Split, you know, fuck, I don't know.
I just, Logan set things off in such a way for me that I'm good with any other X-Men movies. I know you didn't, but we'll talk about that on next week's show because I'm still... We're gonna talk about that.
Well, you're still slowly making your way through it.
Basically, and I'm loving every fucking minute of it.
Why? So fucking slow.
I love it. Yeah. I've never liked an X-Men movie before, and it makes me not understand myself.
I don't know why you would like that one.
Well, let's talk about blockers or cock blockers, as they slyly are getting away with here. And this is John Cena and Leslie Mann's comedic team up. And basically, there are parents that are trying to stop their daughters from having sex on prom night. Great premise. Mm-hmm. Okay trailer. Some big laughs in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right?
But just missing something even in the trailer, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It feels like your basic comedy, and it just doesn't seem to really go above and beyond in any way. So I'll watch it, probably laugh a little bit here and there, but overall, I believe this will be pretty forgettable.
And John Cena is not funny really at all. I mean, it's funny when he's running away with the you know, the beer pong thing, or I'm sorry, the beer bong up his ass. Yeah. But that's a funny thing, but he's not inherently funny.
Not, but he can
Leslie
be
Mann
he can
be obnoxious
funny.
Too when she's
can be
trying
obnoxious.
Too hard.
Ike Barinholtz can be obnoxious,
although I liked him in The House just recently playing the town
all of the I fan of all of them, but I mean, let's be honest, it's kind of the casting. I don't know. It could go all bad, right? With three of these people,
it looks like it could be a premise, a great premise gone to waste in its execution.
Well, when this says Neighbors, I start worrying.
Right. Yeah, I thought the same thing actually. Yeah, from the writers of Neighbors and the creators of Neighbors. Well, let's recap tonight's show. We talked about this. Blade Runner 2049, Trevor says, is one of the best of the year. I say it's long, slow, and boring. We both liked The Bad Batch. Trevor said Free Fire was not nearly as inventive or entertaining as you thought it was going to be. I think Girls Trip was good, and American Made is a step back in the right direction for Tom Cruise. So that's our reviews. For tonight,
you gotta be careful. You gotta actually finish that. I had to say a step back.
Step back in the right
step
direction.
Step back, long pause.
He was very off track there for a second.
Yeah, could you imagine a step back from where he's at now?
I mean, honestly,
that would have been a bad movie.
I'm having a hard time believing that American Made is going to struggle to even get near where Jack Reacher 2 made. Which is bananas to me.
Well, I read I got turned off by reading what that movie actually was as well. So
it's not as bad. There's always the bullet out for Cruise every time there's a movie of his out. I don't understand it.
It's not that. It's the you know, the based on a true story thing where it's not. It's just made up and it's just whatever. It just sounds like why then? I don't know. I just don't understand the need to market it the way they did. Then I mean, why not market it more as a ridiculous movie? I feel like they didn't. I feel like
movies.
They tried to go too serious, and especially in the beginning marketing.
It's not big enough, anyways. It'll catch on HBO and that kind of stuff on the secondary channels.
Yeah, well,
that's going to wrap up episode 328 from the Movie Mavericks podcast. We want to thank you all for listening and continuing your movie journey with us. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I am Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com/warp9. Engage!